Hello, everyone, and welcome back for another affiliate-focused branch of the UF Care Podcast, conversations with early career professionals studying addiction research here at the University of Florida and providing advice and support for those entering the field. My name is Victor. I'm a graduate student here at the University of Florida in the Department of Clinical Health Psychology, working with Dr. Jeff Boisano. And today's guest, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Hey, everybody. My name is Carly Logan. I'm a fifth-year grad student in the psychology department studying behavioral neuroscience, cocaine addiction, and relapse prevention.
Carly Logan also has a 5 out of 5 on Rate My Professor. I looked that up when I was trying to learn more about you
today.
I'm
blushing.
The most helpful rating for you is a student who anonymously put down, Carly's awesome. She's engaging. Everything she says is hilarious. And she does everything in her power to help you get the highest grade possible.
That's all made up.
That was you, right?
Yes, exactly. I actually made all those accounts.
Thank you for joining today, Carly. Just what we're going to do, I'm going to ask you some questions just to get a conversation going. Want to hear about your research and your cool career that you've got going on, and then talk about what's coming next and a little bit about ways to help other people get to the same place.
Sounds great.
Cool. So just to start, could you tell us a little bit about what your research is? I know that it involves rats.
It does involve rats. That's pretty much it. I'm just kidding.
Thanks, everybody.
That was good. That's it. It's a wrap. So we study
rats.
Yes, exactly. So we study cocaine addiction using animal models. So we use our little rats. They go into an operant chamber, and we actually put a jugular catheter in and allow them to self-administer cocaine. So this kind of models humans taking the drug at their own will. We're not forcing it upon them or anything. They go in, they seek the drug. Most of our animal models then will use either a part of time called abstinence, where they'll just remain in their home cage. This is to model if someone were to go to rehab or got in trouble and had to go into the prison systems or something like that. We also use something called extinction training, where they go into the same operant chamber they went in to self-administer the drug, and they learn that they no longer get the drug if they're pressing the same lever. So there's no drugs during that time. And then you see that behavior diminishes over time as it's no longer being reinforced. And then we do different things called reinstatement tests, where we'll do different primes, such as drug-associated cues. We'll represent to the animal, either showing them the context counts as a cue, mm-hmm. Or even a small dose of the drug itself. So then we can see the reemergence of this drug-seeking behavior, which is usually lever pressing. So then we can do different manipulations, such as what my boss studies, ceftriaxone, which is an antibiotic that's currently being used for antibiotic purposes. And then we can do these manipulations such as ceftriaxone to see if we can prevent or reduce the relapse behavior of re-seeking the drug.
Okay, so you set these rats up, and the difference between a rat and a mouse is...
Rats are better. Yes. Just kidding.
They are larger. Mice.
Yes, exactly. So rats are just slightly larger for the things that we do. It's just much easier to do surgeries for rats mm-hmm. than trying to place a catheter. I do a lot of manipulations in the brain where we might put like cannulas aimed into different brain regions.
What's a cannula?
So cannulas are kind of like little, my boss is cringing if she's listening to this, but like little tube slides.
My boss.
Yes. She's like turned off the computer now. They're like little tubes that just go directly down to the brain. Mm-hmm. So what we can do is we'll drill a little hole in the skull and you pretty much just stick it in there. We've got this little thing called a stereotactic thing that holds everything in place. So you know exactly how much you're going down and over. And then you can put the cannula, secure it directly into a brain region. Mm-hmm. So for example, in my most recent project, I infused a drug to kind of turn off these little autoreceptors in the accumbens to see if our drug would still work if those were not functioning properly. So you can do those kind of different little manipulations.
Like you target specifically that area
yeah.
of the brain.
Yeah.
What did you find? Is this something that is done? Is it published?
It is accepted with minor revisions currently, I know, but that was how it was in January, so I'm like sweating as I wait to hear back every day. But we did find that it's an autoreceptor that's mediating glutamate release in the accumbens. So my part of the project was seeing if ceftriaxone, which kind of restores this glutamate dysregulation that's going on from cocaine use disorder, mm-hmm. It is necessary to have those different autoreceptors mediating the release of glutamate.
Okay, so you've got that study, and you've got the one with the cocaine, and you set it up with their jugular,
yeah.
so they can give themselves cocaine whenever they want.
So we put them in for usually 2-hour sessions.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it like 2 hours once a day or is it 2 hours?
Yeah, usually.
Okay.
2 hours once a day. Most rats, I'd say probably 60 to 70% will get it on day one where, you know, if you have two levers presented to you and one was going to give you cupcakes and the other one was not going to give you cupcakes, mm-hmm. you could probably figure it out. So just imagine cupcakes, but now it's cocaine.
Right.
They can usually distinguish pretty well.
Ooh,
that
no,
this
I'm imagining.
I bumped into this lever and I had a great feeling, you know, usually on day one, they start doing it. We usually have a criteria that we want them to do a certain amount of cocaine for usually like 12 days or so.
Okay. And then you test different ways of getting them off of that. You talk about extension and...
So we're testing how to prevent the relapse. So the hardest part of treatment for a cocaine use disorder is that a large percent of people who are actively trying to quit using cocaine cannot abstain from drug use. Even after they go into rehab, you know, they've been clean for 2 months, they get out and they'll relapse.
Mm-hmm.
So what our lab's trying to do is kind of identify what manipulations are necessary to prevent that relapse behavior.
What have you found?
So my boss back in the day, when she was a postdoc, she found ceftriaxone, that antibiotic I mentioned. It kind of restores all of the things in the brain that cocaine's going to mess up. So cocaine use is going to kind of potentiate your systems to kind of like expect the cocaine,
right.
Be ready for the cocaine.
It trains you.
Yes. So ceftriaxone kind of goes in and restores those systems. So we haven't done it in human models yet.
Okay.
It's an antibiotic, so you don't want to just be going around giving everybody antibiotics.
Right.
Plus, it doesn't make everybody feel great when you're doing ceftriaxone, so people probably wouldn't really self-administer ceftriaxone. All of my projects have been, I came in a few years later and I've just been kind of manipulating one single thing that ceftriaxone's doing to see if that's a key thing that ceftriaxone's doing. So for example, GLT-1 is the primary glutamate uptake in the accumbens.
Mm-hmm.
So ceftriaxone restores GLT-1 expression after cocaine.
Okay.
So I used an adeno-associated virus. So I infused a virus just directly into the nucleus accumbens to overexpress GLT-1 to see if just that manipulation was enough to prevent relapse.
So you're kind of going like step by step to figure out exactly what's happening so you can understand how it can be used for humans.
Yeah. Definitely.
That's really cool.
So usually like the sentence I say the most in all these talk about my work. It is finding the changes from ceftriaxone that are necessary and sufficient to prevent relapse. So some of the changes, just like in any drug where you have side effects, these things could be occurring, but is that what's contributing to the reduction of relapse? So each of my projects are either manipulating that single variable on its own, or in my past study we talked about where I give ceftriaxone and then I block one part, so the autoreceptors.
It's very methodological.
See, you know, if that is contributing or if that's just kind of a side thing that's happening, ceftriaxone might be working, you know, throughout the whole brain, throughout the whole body. So we're kind of just piecing it together to figure out what parts are necessary.
Methodical.
Yes, thank you. We try.
So how did you get into this research? How did you find yourself in this wonderful world of rats and also cocaine?
So I would like to say it was very graceful. And I was like, this is what I've always wanted to do. So here
like
I am. I know. So that's never how it goes.
No.
And if you're out there right now saying that's how it went, you're full of baloney. So when I went to college, I didn't really even know that neuroscience existed. I went to a small little school called Kent State University, Flashes Forever. And I was a psychology major. I knew I wanted to do something challenging and hard. I wanted to go to school for a ridiculous amount of time and never go back. Just like one shot, get it all in. So I was psychology and I had a minor of pre-law because that's challenging, right?
Right, right.
So that was all fine and dandy. I didn't really enjoy the lower level psychology courses such as like social or personality. Like they were fine and I went through them and I did well, but I wasn't like passionate about it. And then... The last two courses I needed for my bachelor's of psychology were two upper division courses taught by this woman I loved, who I didn't know at the time, but had a PhD in neuroscience. So I took drugs and behavior and I took biological psychology. And then before I even got the results back from my LSAT that I was taking while I was doing these courses, I knew that I could not be done with those topics. It was pretty much the only class that I took in college that I didn't even have to study. It just like made sense. Learning about these, you know, how a drug affects your brain and therefore your behavior was like the most interesting thing I've ever learned about. even all the way down to just like antihistamines and Tylenol. Like that stuff was just so exciting to me. So, you know, nice and casually in the fourth year of college, one foot into law school, I was like, never mind. So I joined some research labs really quick, and I kind of switched. Instead of a bachelor's of arts of psychology, I added a couple classes and went by bachelor of science in psychology. So I had a little bit more stats and more biology. And then I took my GRE and applied frantically. And I found Dr. Nagstead, which was probably the luckiest time of my life, where it was kind of my dream to always go to University of Florida. I was thinking for law school. So I shifted a little bit over and was like, oh my gosh.
A few buildings away.
Here is a woman studying the neurobiology of addiction. So pretty much ever since, you know, I got rats before I even started grad school. And like pretty much as soon as I got off the plane, she's like, here's some animals. This is what we're going to do. And like the first year of grad school of like learning all these different techniques and struggling because it's, you know, not easy, but it was like so challenging and so fun for me that I was like, this is what I'm passionate about. Like, this is what I want to build my career around. So
that's really cool to hear.
Thank you. Not graceful at all. Like falling down some stairs, but I landed.
You landed. Yeah. Hopefully. With your hands up in the air.
Yes.
There you go. So what's next? So you're finishing up the program here.
I am. Thank you so much for asking.
Yes.
It's my favorite thing to talk about.
Because I'm sure your time here was so, getting to this point was so graceful, I'm sure, following from
yes,
here.
Yes, exactly. I continue to keep tumbling down this flight of stairs over here. So far, the hard work is paying off of, you know, my students will always say, like, I don't know if I could go to school for that long. I'm like, me neither. And here I am still doing it, chugging along. So I am currently exploring postdoc opportunities. I have kind of toyed, you know, this is a kind of time where I could switch into more human stuff. Maybe I want to try to learn what the heck a voxel is on an fMRI or something. So over the past couple months, I've just kind of been trying on hats of like, you know, if I went to work and did what you guys do, what Bethany does. Hi, Bethany. You know, would that be something I'd enjoy? Would that be, you know, something that would get me as excited as I am when I go to lab now? So I've kind of moved in the direction of like staying in animal models, and I think I enjoy like the neurobiology kind of aspect where I really enjoy the behavior, but I also really enjoy like the molecular, you know, mechanisms behind. So I'd like to stay doing something like that. I'm currently exploring some postdocs, and I'm currently exploring some job opportunities too. You know I want to stay in research. So whatever's the best opportunity for those things.
That's the way to do it. Keep yourself open to the opportunities and
exactly.
You know, find.
Just keep stumbling along.
Works. Yeah. So I was recommended by Dr. Boisneau to ask about your dissertation.
Okay.
What specifically is that all about?
Okay.
Don't really know anything
so
about it.
So it's a lot of the things that we talked about already.
Okay.
Because you spend, you know, your bulk of your time. If you're doing grad school well, you probably have some side stuff going on also. Mm-hmm. Where I've always had a clear path of this is my dissertation, like these are the projects. I have three main projects that are like the path of my dissertation. But luckily enough, I've learned skills from those projects that have helped me have kind of these side projects going on also. You mentioned oxytocin, which, you know, the media loves to talk about oxytocin.
Yes.
Oxytocin actually is protectant or sort of protectant against cocaine relapse. Which is obviously a much better treatment option than trying to give someone an antibiotic, for example. So I've done a couple side projects doing microdialysis, measuring glutamate and dopamine levels in response to oxytocin. But my main stuff is the GLT-1 upregulation. You know, is that necessary or sufficient to attenuate relapse? I got my good old mGlu2-3, which are those autoreceptors we talked about. And then I'm currently stumbling down the hallway of my third project, which is going to be pretty much we found out that mGlu2-3, which are those autoreceptors, are necessary for ceftriaxone to work. So we're manipulating mGlu2 specifically expression in projections from the prefrontal cortex to the nucleus accumbens, which is a really important pathway for relapse. So for the last chunk, we're trying to do two adeno-associated viruses. It's right. like one wasn't bad enough. Now we're going to do two. One in the PFC and one to the nucleus accumbens. And then where those two come together is where that virus will be activated.
Okay.
And then we're going to like knock down a protein specifically in those projections.
Right. So basically like the next level of these things that you've been doing the whole time you've been here.
Yep. Just keeps climbing up.
Yeah, it does. That's really impressive and really cool.
Thank you.
I want to thank you very much for your time here today.
Of course.
Before we go, do you have any advice for others interested in research, interested in this sort of work with rats or with addiction research that might help them?
Definitely. So the thing that I always tell my students, I've had this conversation with my students many a times, sometimes, you know, one right after the other, which is lovely. I'm always happy to talk and give people advice. But my biggest chunk of advice would always be to make sure, number one, to do what you want to do, you need the degree you're seeking. Because if you are like, I just want to go get a PhD, and like you don't need a PhD, that's not going to really be a smooth path. It's not like this is like a joyride of 5 more years of like undergrad. That would be lovely. But then my other advice would also be to always make sure that you're doing something that you really enjoy. Like even in the realm of neuroscience, cognitive neuroscience, behavioral neuroscience, molecular neuroscience, there are tons of different options. And if I would have happened into an addiction human research lab, I don't know that I'd be as happy as I am with, you know, manipulating those molecular things and studying that behavioral output. So there's tons of different opportunities out there, but you know, you just want to get well versed in what those opportunities might be and figure out which one's best for you. Because if you don't love it, 15-hour days in lab are going to be rough.
It's going to be, it's going to be a bit of a drag, maybe.
Yeah. I know. I do like 12 hours and I'm like, wow, that was fast. Like I just don't
that's
even
good.
Notice it happened.
That's
I'm
so
like,
good.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, that's loving your job.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for being here, Carly.
Of course. Thank
really
you all so much.
It. So we have to give a big thanks to some people for helping put all this together. First, the University of Florida Center for Addiction Research and Education, as well as Dr. Oliver Grundman, Dr. Sarah Jo Nixon, Dr. Joanna Paris, and all of our mentors and future collaborators.
Shout out to you, Dr. Nagstead.
Thank you all very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.